Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, and today we're joined by Colonel Douglas McGregor, who I think has been the best on-point analyst of the situation, both in Ukraine and Russia, as well as the Middle East currently. Welcome, Colonel Douglas McGregor. It's an honor to have you on the show today, sir.
Well, thank you.
And I understand also that you have just accepted a job as the president of an organization, OurCountryOurChoice.com. So congratulations.
Actually, it's a chief executive officer.
Oh, I'm sorry. A chief executive CEO. Thank you for the correction.
That's fine.
CEO, Our Country, Our Choice. Could you give us a quick description of what the organization focuses on?
Yeah, this is an organization that was founded to unite Americans across party lines. We determined that there are lots of Americans in both the Republican and Democratic parties who actually share traditional conservative values and are tired of the divisiveness of the country. They want to put an end to the overseas interventions. They want to restore the rule of law, crack down on the criminality inside the country, secure our borders. That includes ultimately securing our ports, littoral waters, and rounding up and expelling the illegals. Electoral integrity is a big issue. And finally, stopping the sexualization of our children. Those are the basic issues. And that's where we try to focus most of our attention and resources.
Well, those seem like high priority items to me. And I think our audience would agree. And so let me segue with that, because it seems like the U.S. Congress is Israel first, Ukraine second, and America last. What's your response to that?
U.S. Congress is really me first, and then everything else that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And what comes next is a function of how, to the extent to which the individuals are rewarded for their support financially. Remember, you've got a House of Representatives where people serve for 2 years, which means they spend 50%+ of their time trying to be reelected. They're starved for money. And so anyone that comes up and says, look, if you'll support me, I'm the pharmaceutical industry, for instance, or I'm the advocate for country X or whatever, then we can put additional funds into your political action committee and help you with your reelection.
Yes.
That gets a lot of attention. And that's how Washington runs. The Senate's a little bit better, though no less greedy. In fact, more greedy, probably. But they're there for 6 years, so they're not constantly trying to be reelected, but they certainly don't miss the opportunity to enrich themselves.
To that point, one of the things that you've covered over the last couple of years in your commentary and analysis of the Ukraine situation, and by the way, I really appreciate your interviews with Judge Napolitano. I think I've watched every one of them for quite some time, is you talk about the incompetence of the decision-making in the U.S. State Department. And yet the fact that there is so much financial reward for the military industrial complex, let's say, the weapons industry, but a lack of competence in how to even deploy weapons in a way that would reach effective goals. Is this, could we say that is it a racket? Is that an appropriate term to use to describe that? Or how would you describe it?
Well, you can certainly use the word racket. I would start at the top with the simple statement that we have no national strategy. National strategy involves military power. It involves economic development. It involves cultivating good relations for the purposes of commerce and business overseas. You know, you go down the list. Grand strategy consists of many, many things, including, of course, development of technology and its incorporation, integration into society and the military. We really don't have that. What we have are a set of loosely defined interests, and we're driven by those. And those interests are not always national interests. For instance, I would argue that we have no national strategic interest per se in eastern Ukraine. The only interest we've ever had in Ukraine was to promote peace and stability in the region, which is something we haven't done. In fact, we've done the opposite. And in the Middle East, we certainly don't have any interest in cultivating a regional war against Israel and the United States. But again, we've set those things aside in favor of what I would call current interests or financially rewarding interests or both. That means the flavor of the month is we're all going to rush, claim that Ukraine is some sort of pristine democracy, and that we all have an obligation to defend it against the evil Russians who are some version of what they were under the Soviet Union or whatever. It's all nonsense. It makes no sense. There's no one in charge. You know, there's no one in the White House, per se, as far as I can tell. And the people who are there are simply riding this ship of state wherever it takes them. So we're in a lot of trouble as a nation. We don't really define our fundamental interests, and we don't essentially link means and ends. We have no sense of limitations. Well, you know, we think our resources are unlimited, and they're not.
Then going from what you just said, how much credibility is the United States losing on the world stage? For example, Anthony Blinken in his recent trip to the Middle East, he was not treated like a U.S. official used to be treated, let's say 20 years ago. Not at all. He was thrown out and made to wait and whatever, and largely ignored. Have we lost what we once had now as a nation?
Oh, I think we've been in trouble for a long time. You've got to go back and consider that certainly up until World War I, with a possible exception of the Spanish-American War, which was a war we could have avoided and subsequently regretted for various reasons. But really, up until World War I, we were a nation that focused preeminently on building prosperity at home and pursuing peace abroad. In other words, the formula for success for the United States was, if we build our economic foundation well, we raise our standard of living, and we cultivate the emergence of an educated, intelligent, hardworking population, the rest of the world will notice, and they'll want to imitate us. They'll want to admire us. And there was nothing in the Constitution or in the minds of the people that founded this country about intervening in other people's affairs. In fact, when Thomas Jefferson suggested that we should join with the revolutionary French, at the time, as you know, under Napoleon, and help them spread their quote-unquote revolution across the world, especially in Europe, Washington and Hamilton, who both liked Jefferson, concluded that Jefferson had lost his mind. And Washington made the point that no nation can be expected to move beyond the limits of its own interests. Mm-hmm. We had no interest in spreading revolution anywhere. We had only one interest, overriding strategic interest, and that was to secure the North American continent so that English-speaking people conquered and ruled the nation from the Atlantic to the Pacific, and that within that framework, we would have a republic that was somewhat democratic, although not as much as people think, and it was designed to promote stability and peace. And your entire Constitution simply tells the American people what the government may not do to them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
That's very important. There's nothing else like it in human history. Most constitutions are all about the powers of the state. Well, our Constitution describes in great detail what the state may not do to us. We've lost touch with all of that. And by essentially signing on for these wars of intervention, go back to Vietnam. We certainly went there under false pretenses and deluded ourselves into believing that we were somehow or another spreading democracy and a new liberal order, or whatever you want to call it, by killing 2 million Vietnamese. That didn't work out very well. And we lost a lot of credibility as a result of that. We then worked to bring it back. And, you know, we finally did, I think, regain a lot of credibility, particularly in 1991, not just for military reasons, but the way we handled it diplomatically and our insistence that this was not a war of conquest, that we were not interested in annexing or holding on to Iraq or anything else. We were simply trying to remove it as a danger to the world's oil concentration and keep the oil flowing. That was it, really. So as a result, you know, we were in pretty good shape. Then we started this business of intervention after the fall or the collapse of the Soviet state system. We began deluding ourselves to believe that we were the indispensable nation, that our rights, our values were universal when they never were and never will be. We lost our respect for other people's countries, other people's national interests, other people's cultures and way of life. It's been a disaster.
Well, right, exactly. But America today seems to be very good at running around the world attempting to bludgeon other nations into compliance with the Western liberal order, but at great cost to the proxy nations. And you've spoken about this. Look at the devastation of Ukraine. how many Ukrainian young men in particular lives have been lost, hundreds of thousands, where under the quote guidance, mostly of the United States of America. And my question to you, sir, is Israel now in a similar situation where the U.S. is willing to fight Iran to the last Israeli, for example, just as America wanted to fight Russians to the last Ukrainian? Is that a fair comparison, or is that a similar risk in your view?
Well, I think what we've got in Ukraine with regard to Israel is somewhat different set of circumstances. Israel was founded after the Second World War, came into existence as a state largely because Harry Truman breathed life into it. And the rationale at the time was twofold. Number one, the Jews just endured this horrible Holocaust. 6 million were systematically murdered, either in camps or across Eastern Europe. And then secondly, because Harry Truman's political advisors told him that if you recognize the independence of the state of Israel, we will have unlimited quantities of money at our disposal for the Democratic Party in perpetuity. Now, it turns out that they were largely correct. Enormous quantities of Jewish money have been poured into various political entities in the United States to maintain this relationship and sustain effectively Israel's stature and influence inside the United States. And that's worked very well. But at this point, we're a little different than we were, say, 20, 30, 40, 50 years ago. If you go back through Israel's previous campaigns, previous wars, Israel was always restrained by presidents who intervened, as Eisenhower did in 56, and said, you know, we're not going to underwrite your conquest of the Suez, in other words, of the Sinai Peninsula. And the Israelis had come into the Suez Project, along with the British and the French, who were interested in regaining control of Suez Canal, and Eisenhower threw them out and said, no, and you Israelis cannot have the Sinai Peninsula. Again, in 1967, Lyndon Johnson supported them, but Lyndon Johnson also made it clear that there were limits to how much support he was willing to provide. Finally, you get Richard Nixon in 1973, when the Israelis initially were attacked by the Egyptians and the Syrians managed to throw them back. The Egyptians were the toughest nut to crack because they had simply crossed the canal and set up a defense, had not tried to maneuver. And the Israelis had enormous difficulties with that defense, but eventually they broke through and managed to cross the Suez Canal and come in behind the Egyptians. When that happened, Richard Nixon made it clear that's unacceptable. You're going to have to pull back across the Suez Canal, or we won't be able to negotiate an end to this. We might end up at war with Russia. And so the Israelis eventually withdrew and retired back behind the Suez Canal. And you know, we got the Camp David Accords. And built, at least for the past 50 years, a very good relationship between Egypt and Israel. Well, here we are again, and we're dealing with another Israeli government, only this time the government has said, we want to finally, once and for all, settle accounts with these Muslim Arabs in Gaza. It's not enough to destroy Hamas. We have to eliminate the foundation for Hamas. And that foundation are the 2.2 million Arabs living inside the Gaza Strip. And no one has stood up and said, I'm sorry, but eliminating the 2.2 million people from this Gaza Strip is unacceptable. We won't underwrite it. We won't support it. That is something that we have opposed repeatedly. We opposed so-called ethnic cleansing in Bosnia-Herzegovina. You know, we've opposed ethnic cleansing in Africa. How can we now stand up and support what effectively is ethnic cleansing of people in Palestinians in Gaza? So this is a tough nut to crack, because what's different today is that I think Mr. Netanyahu has more influence and authority on the Hill than President Biden.
Wow.
And Biden's government is really lost. They don't seem to know what to do. Every time Blinken opens his mouth and makes some policy pronouncement, President Netanyahu contradicts him and tells him, absolutely not. That's not what we are going to do. Most recently, it was, in the event this war ends and Gaza is devoid of Hamas, then we're going to retain control of it. We'll police it. That is the Israelis. And Blinken had previously made a statement that they were looking for a different solution that would not involve Israeli control of Gaza.
Uh-huh.
So I think it's pretty clear that thanks to the power and influence that Israel has won over many decades through its lobby in Washington, has paid off. And right now, Mr. Netanyahu is clearly in charge. And this is a very dangerous situation for a great power like the United States, because do we want to be dragged into a potential regional war with virtually everyone in the region?
That's a critical question. I completely agree with that line of reasoning there, but there are also domestic implications for this. So, for example, our mutual acquaintance, Michael Yon, he has been covering the wide open border and how Mayorkas has funded camps, you know, in the Darien Gap and Panama, staging areas for an ongoing invasion of the United States. And then now, with the U.S. supporting Israel's ongoing bombardment of civilian targets, hospitals, universities, refugee camps in Gaza, we run the very real risk, and this is what I'd like your response to, the very real risk of many of the illegals in the United States becoming more activated or more radicalized if they happen to be, let's say, Palestinians or linked to Hamas or something. So couldn't there be a very real domestic risk of, you know, suicide bombers or what have you, because of the poorly thought out policies of the way the U.S. State Department is interacting with Israel?
Well, I think the answers to your questions are yes and yes. First of all, we don't even know who's inside the United States. We have no idea how many illegals are really here. I spoke to a couple of people who have to remain anonymous for obvious reasons over at Homeland Security. And I asked specifically, you know, the numbers that have been published say that we might have 8 million illegals in the country. And they began laughing.
Right.
He said, "Are you kidding?" And I said, "No, this is what's out." He said, "Well, we've got at least 28 million, probably more." And went on to explain that 7 or 8 million have come across the border since Biden became president. Remember that most of the people you're talking about that we see on television are the people that we've caught, at least insofar as we've apprehended them and noted them, at least who they say they are, registered them, handed them a check for $2,350, and then a free ticket to wherever they want to go in the United States.
Yes.
But we don't know who they are. We don't know what they think. And it's very clear that no one in Washington particularly cares. You know, this whole notion of assimilation, which was really designed to be Americanization, has been thrown out. So no one has to assimilate. No one is going to be seriously interrogated about their origins and their connections and their beliefs. This is what's happened to us. So we're really on a suicidal path ourselves, but it's a different kind of suicide. It's assisted suicide, with the government assisting people to destroy us by overwhelming us internally with foreigners. And I would argue that this is going to become a real issue once we go into a severe recession, or worse, into a depression, which more and more people think is possible.
Yes.
So we may systematically disintegrate ourselves as a great power because we have no social cohesion, because we can't impose the rule of law, because we can't uphold the rule of law. Meantime, you know, we're sending forces over potentially to assist and support Israel. And most of us have nothing opposed to that, but those forces are not there for the purpose that you mentioned at the outset, to wage war against others. They're there to support the security and survival of the Israeli state. But what Mr. Netanyahu is now doing, and his supporters are doing, is they're saying, look, we have an opportunity. We can leverage American military power, which is doing nothing on the border and nothing to secure the United States. And we can leverage it to our heart's content to settle accounts with everybody we don't like or who opposes us in the Middle East. That's a very dangerous picture, because now we're talking about the Turks and the Iranians joining together with the various Arab states in what is coalescing into a military alliance aimed at Israel.
Yes. May I ask you more about, I want to respond to everything you just said there, but may I ask you about our country, our choice, a little bit more?
Sure, absolutely.
I mean, I know that's a recent position there as CEO, but what our country, ourchoice.com, that's the website again for the audience.
Right.
But what you're doing there is profound because, you know, I tend to lean conservative politically, but I feel disillusioned about the GOP and the Conservative Party, and even in many ways, some of the decisions that Trump has made. And a lot of conservatives have been very interested in people like Robert F. Kennedy Jr. But then, you know, there's a debate about his positions with Israel, the Middle East, and so on. But the platform that you have at OurCountryOurChoice.com seems to really find the most important middle ground that matters to the American people. And it's not affiliated with one side, one party or aisle or the other. Can you speak to how Our Country, Our Choice hopes to exert influence and help change the conversations?
Well, we do have a lot of members already. We've got 35,000 fully registered. We've got another 80,000 lined up who want to join. And bear in mind that it costs nothing to join Our Country, Our Choice. Now, we're not charging anybody anything. That's not what we want to do. We know these are hard times. We want Americans to join us, and then within the framework of our organization, to join what we would call action groups that are going to participate directly in efforts to deal with the major issues that I just mentioned. One of the reasons we did this is that we ran into lots of Republicans and Democrats who basically said, we go to vote, and regardless of whomever is elected, we get the same policies
right
over and over and over again. So is this thing we call the Republican and Democratic two-party system really viable? A lot of people are concluding it probably isn't. It doesn't mean anything. So how do we get something done? How do we exert pressure? How do we drive change? And when it comes to these conflicts overseas, a simple statement, we ask people, well, what do you think? Do you think that we should fight in other people's conflicts and wars around the world unless we are attacked? And they think about that and they say, well, you're saying we haven't been attacked and we're not under threat and we're going to go fight. I said, yes. They said, well, that's wrong. Well, of course it's wrong.
Right.
What are we doing those things for? So it's a very common sense, logical approach. And, you know, why aren't we spending trillions here at home to deal with the multitude of problems we have? We've lost an estimated $14 trillion over the last 20 years in these wars in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere, frankly, also Syria and Libya. What could we have done with that $14 trillion? And look at our national sovereign debt, which it now presents a real threat. So, you know, all of this is bound up together. Then when you move beyond that, you start talking about immigration. Well, don't you support immigration? Yeah, I think immigration is fine. Well, do you like what we're doing in this country? No. Why don't you like it? Because we have no control over who comes in or goes out of the country. Well,
that's right.
Anybody can leave, but we have no control over whomever comes in. And all of these people are showing up in and around our cities. And so the cities and the states have to support them because these people aren't showing up to do jobs. Now, is that because they're lazy or don't want to work? That's not what I said. There are no jobs for them. And once things get bad in this country economically and financially, and they have before, these people are in trouble because many of them will probably hold down jobs at very low wages that Americans will then need in order to survive. So what do you do with them? Well, FDR and Herbert Hoover deported something in the neighborhood, I think a total of 12 million people to Mexico. 9 million initially after the stock market crashed to open up jobs, and another 3.5 million under FDR, and then subsequently another 2.5 million under Truman and 1.5 million under Eisenhower. Well,
those were big numbers, especially in that day.
Exactly. And that was done. And what we're saying is we have to have viable police forces, viable military establishments, not woke organizations that are there to sort of satisfy someone's ridiculous notions of social engineering and social justice. Police exist to impose and enforce the law. Law is only meaningful if the police can enforce it. The same thing is true of the military. The military is only effective if it can fight. And that means it has to defend us, defend the continental United States and the American people. All of these things hang together. And that's really where we want to focus at our country, our choice. And I think it's going to work. And I think we're going to attract a lot more people. As I said, there's a 80 plus thousand trying to get in right now, and we're having trouble keeping up the computer. I mean, we have computers like everybody else has, and the site's crashing.
It's only going to get worse after this interview gets published, by the way. I have to apologize in advance. So let me tell the audience then, if you go to ourcountryourchoice.com, and if you have any difficulty, just wait 24 hours. Try it again. You know, I don't know how people sign up. Do they just, is there a sign up page?
Go to the website and then click your way through it. There, it'll give you instructions.
Okay.
Where you go, what you want to fill out, and give us all of your information. Whatever you tell us is going to be protected. We have our own servers. We have extensive security. And, you know, just keep something in mind. This is very important. We're never going to tell anybody how to vote. That's not what we exist to do.
Yes.
But we are going to try to inform people about what people running for office really think and what they are likely to do. Because all of us have voted for people on the assumption, well, so-and-so is a Republican, so-and-so is a Democrat. They get into office and how do they behave? As though they're foreign agents. Not right. Representing American national interests. So we want to keep people informed. We want to encourage them to be involved in these action groups that are going to aim at very specific things like the illegal human trafficking and the sexualization of children. I think it's going to work. These are early stages. We don't have all the answers. So we're receptive to what other people want to tell us.
Well, in fact, Colonel, if you're open to this invitation, After this, please put our producer in touch with your marketing team for Our Country, Our Choice. There are a number of ways that we can help spread the word on our platform, Brighteon and Brighteon.tv and so on. We'd love to help support that and help bring people to your cause, because it seems like, from what you're telling me today, it's a desperately needed common sense type of position. We have to defend what we have or we lose it. It's that simple.
And we really do need unity. There's too much division in the country. There are too many people at each other's throats. So we have to focus on the things that unite us. And if you're an American citizen who cares about his country and loves his country, the things I mentioned are those things that will bind us together.
Well said. And I'm so glad to hear this from you. Thank you for sharing that announcement with us today. Thank you for your analysis and for taking the time with us. You're always welcome back here. And again, put us in touch with your team, and we'll help get the word out about this.
Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you. Have a wonderful day. Take care now.
Thank you.
Okay. That was Colonel Douglas McGregor, everyone. Of course, you are free to repost this interview on other channels or platforms. Thank you for your time and your interest in defending America today. And of course, this is Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. God bless you all. Thank you for watching today. Take care. Thank you for supporting us here at Brighteon.com. And one way you can also help support us is by shopping at HealthRangerStore.com. And we've got some really exciting new products to share with you here today. I've got samples on my desk, and there's three things to mention here. The one on the left, it's called Hydrate Elementals. It's a combination of coconut water powder, certified organic, and Aquamen, which is a mineral supplement that has some very special, unique properties. This is about mineral replenishment and hydration. You can learn more about it at our website, healthrangerstore.com. It's very popular, especially with people who do any kind of fitness or workouts. We've also got here on the right side a new trail mix product. This has coconut chips and nuts and almonds and walnuts plus raisins. It's a very delicious trail mix, and it's not just a bunch of junk and a bunch of crumbs and byproducts of nut processing. I mean, this is a high-end trail mix, all certified organic, all lab tested, including for glyphosate and heavy metals and more. Check it out at healthrangerstore.com. You're really going to enjoy this. And then finally, in the middle there, we have something brand new that I'm super excited about. It's a pine needle nasal spray. And that's in the green little small vials there with the nasal spray aerosolized tip on the top. I personally harvested the pine needles for this in Texas. They're loblolly pine trees because the pine needles are extremely high in shikimic acid. And then I oversaw the extraction of the shikimic acid and then the mixing of that into this formula. You can read the ingredients on our website. But this product is not being sold. It's only available for free as a bonus giveaway during our Black Friday sale event that's coming up. And watch for that. Join our email list. You'll get the announcements. You get, you know, all the links to participate in that. The only way that you can get that nasal spray with the shikimic acid using pine needles that I personally harvested in Texas is through the Black Friday event at healthrangerstore.com. And during that event, by the way, it's our biggest sale of the year. We're going to have the most products on discount, all kinds of amazing discounts, including on third-party products that are drop shipped and so on. It's wait till you see the catalog and the landing page for that. It's going to be quite impressive. But you definitely want to take advantage of that and get some of this pine needle nasal spray. And look up shikimic acid, too, because that's the molecule that is used to make Tamiflu, by the way. Very interesting fact. Also, one more thing. On our website, healthrangerstore.com, we now have available certified organic heavy cream powder. We've got it in pouches and number 10 cans. And this heavy cream powder is, of course, you know, laboratory verified. It's tested for, you know, heavy metals and glyphosate and microbiology as well. And there's no junk in here. It's literally powdered heavy cream. It's not just maltodextrin and you know, a bunch of garbage with cream flavor. None of that stuff. This is the real deal. That's why it's not cheap, by the way. But if you want to add to your food storage pantry heavy cream, this goes a long way. And we also have, by the way, we have now organic white cheddar cheese powder, also in number 10 cans and pouches as well. So you can make your own macaroni and cheese pretty easily by combining this cheese powder with the organic cream powder and some salt and pepper and some onion powder and get yourself some, you know, organic macaroni. And it's all done. You have a really nice meal. So take advantage of this at healthrangerstore.com, and that will also help support this platform. We thank you for your support, and I'm committed to bringing you more interviews, more content, more analysis each and every day that helps you understand what's happening in our world, helps you navigate it, and also, importantly, helps you survive it. Thank you for supporting us here at Brighteon.com and healthrangerstore.com. Take care.